My guest in this studio is a gadget guru. It is editor of GadgetDetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast, Fevzi Turkel.
Hello.
Hello. And I was just saying to Fevzi that we've been chatting on air for quite some time now, years. Never met him. This is the first time we've actually gone, oh, you're real.
Well, there was a rumour you were an AI, so I thought I'd just come and, I still haven't seen the lower half.
Yeah, so, that's true. You know. That's true. A lot of people have never seen me. I've met somebody, they went, you've got legs. Like, yeah, I know. Now, if they were going to do AI, they'd draw it a bit better, wouldn't they? I mean, let's be honest. Let's be honest. Fevzi, it's really good to see you. Thank you for coming in to the studio, because what I want to do with things like this, with gadgets particularly, is to say to people who are listening, there's no such thing as a dumb question, right? Because if you don't know, you don't know. Right.
Yeah.
And so if there's any question that you have, then don't be going, oh, I'm not sure about this. Because if you're thinking it, then a lot of other people will be thinking it as well.
Those are the best questions, because they're the ones that apply to most people. Sometimes you have someone who's been struggling with a question for 6 months. They, by this point, know more about it than I do. And you're into the minutiae, and it's only really them that are interested in the answer.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the problem.
So the broader questions.
Yeah,
good.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Fevzi, we've got some lovely gadgets to go through. You've tempted me. You've been tempting me with wireless pro compact microphones.
Yeah, so they come in a little, this is a little charging case.
I've been a broadcaster for a long time, and I'm used to the big,
you just pull them out. So that's a charging case. Takes three units, and it charges up from the internal battery. So you've not only got the battery inside the device, you've got the battery inside the charging case
and so
as well.
So it clips on.
So these are from an Australian company called Rode. Yeah, I know. And you've got all your little accessories here as well.
You've got a puff gag on there.
Yeah, I've got one in there.
Oh, I like a puff gag.
If you can find it.
I can find
it. So this is from an Australian company called Rode, who are actually known for their microphones, but they actually do a lot of other pro and sort of semi-pro audio equipment. This is called the Rode Wireless Pro, and it's a wireless microphone system. I know. It's...
Furry
See, they
thing.
Used to call them dead cats, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is particularly clever. It's got some clever things to it. So first of all, the transmission between them is wireless and it's digital. So you actually get... did I just hear it snap?
No. I was just pulling it off. I haven't broken it.
No, it's fine. So it's got a couple of tricks up its sleeve. First of all, it's got a technology called 32 bits float. What does that mean? It means when it records, it doesn't matter what level you set. It can be too quiet, or you can actually be overloading the audio and get clipping, and it can still recover it.
Really?
It does this really clever mathematical trick where it can actually recover. You just don't have to worry about the levels. It's pretty much impossible to ruin a recording by setting the wrong level, which
that's
is really,
really impressive.
Really important.
Actually, this is the end of sound men.
Yeah,
it?
Well, except you know,
so
if you forget to switch
like
it on, it won't work.
It's like a little family of gremlins.
I know. It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's also got built-in time code into the recording, so people who remember old tapes with time code.
So
the idea of this is you can record different people. Each person's obviously on their own microphone. How do you synchronize it all? In the old days you'd like clap if it was video, but here you actually got a time code, so it automatically synchronizes up. Universally compatible, it works with a range of cameras, smartphones, both iOS and Android.
How do you pair them?
And computers, they do it all automatically. It's pretty much idiot-proof.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
So even if you're recording on your iPhone, for example, it will just pair.
So, and the nice thing is it doesn't just send the signal to record. It also records locally on the device itself. You get 40 hours recording time on the device itself. So if something goes wrong with the transmission or you accidentally delete your recording...
You've got
a backup as well. And each person's got their own one. So it comes with a couple of lav mics built in as well. So those things are a bit chunky.
Yeah.
You sometimes see them even in, professional...
You do, actually. I have recognised them.
Get used to it. But to me, they don't have the sartorial elegance that I require.
Yeah, of course.
So you can use the lav microphone. It works very, very well. Comes with a complete kit. So usual price for this is about about £266.
For three microphones?
Yeah, it's not bad. And but you can get it for a little bit less than that. So I've given it 4.5 stars out of 5 because we talked about the features, but the most important thing is sound quality is really good.
The recording quality is really good. And they've even colour-coded the...
I know, they always do that. They colour code, yes, so that when it goes to, and when you go into the mixer, you can have the same colour codes. And
yeah, I mean, that happens in live performances. And whenever I've ever done anything live on a stage, you have your own mic colour, that corresponds with a fader.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you plug it into some Rode equipment, like they do the Rodecaster Pro 2, for example, which is a mixer. But it's a really smart mixer. We've talked about it before. It's the one that gives you the funky voice. You can be
I quite fancy getting one of those.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that you can then program the lights, colours for each channel. So on the faders, you actually see the right colour. So you actually know what you're doing.
And they, when you're sitting, because sometimes, you know, if you're doing podcasts, for example, if you're too close to a microphone, sometimes that can cause a problem. But if you've got people in close proximity using these, should be okay.
It's fine. And as I say, even if you clip, which is, you know, where the audio goes too high and it can't handle it, you can recover that and get a perfect recording still. So the key thing there is 32-bit float. Don't ask me how it works. I've got a degree in applied physics. I still can't quite get my head around. It's kind of magic, you know. It shouldn't be able to do that, but it can.
I mean, these are very, very smart. And so many people these days are recording their own stuff. And they are, you know, doing their own broadcasting. What? So something like this is for three microphones, I don't think that price. Give me the price again.
But it's about £250, depending on where you buy it. Sometimes you get it cheaper. If you wait till November, Black Friday deals will come round.
Yeah. So, and this charges.
Yeah. So
on the
it's
road,
a bit like,
you've
you know,
got to charge a cable.
Yeah, you know, like earbuds, where it's got its own little battery, but then when you put it in the case, it charges from the battery in the case.
Yeah.
It's the same idea, but you're charging three units at once.
And it's a very neat little.
It is.
Very neat.
It is good, isn't it?
I like that a lot, actually. It's great. Yeah. We've got a call, Fevzi, as well. This is from Simon, who's in Cornwall. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Petra. It's the second time I spoke with you now.
Well, that's. Please keep doing it, because it's nice. Simon, Fevzi's here. What do you want to ask him?
I would like to talk about these new glasses. They're supposed to be taken... the technology by storm, as far as maybe replacing a portion of the handset, for instance. One of them has got a screen on them. I just wondered what the comments are on them and if there's any advice on what are the better ones or anything.
So these are the new ones from Meta we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of other companies as well that are advertising.
They are.
Ones.
The Meta ones, I would say, for the price, are the most technologically advanced ones, and they've got some interesting things. So first of all, it's a pair of glasses, looks like a pair of Ray-Bans, essentially, although the stem is a little bit thicker than usual. But they're not. They don't look so weird that people will stare at you for wearing them. And it's got a very nice, essentially like a heads-up display in the lens. So you get what's called augmented reality. You get an overlay of information while seeing the real world. So it's not like virtual reality goggles where it blacks out everything around you and replaces it. It gives it. One of the really nice things is the control mechanism. So there's this thing that they strap to your arm or your... That can actually detect movements before they're visible. So it's just picking up the very, very fine movements. And it gives you quite... it takes a little bit of time to get used to, but it gives you quite finessed control. And that's something that's going to continue to develop, but it's a huge step forward at the moment. I must admit, when they demonstrated it, it was not working properly, but at least they were brave enough to do a live demo of it. You know, you have an Apple launch... Love Apple, but they everything is choreographed and pre-recorded, and you know nothing ever goes wrong really. So they were brave enough to do this. It does give rise, you know, these sorts of classes give rise to some social etiquette questions about, for example, should you have a tally light on it? So if you're recording, should there be a light to let the person you're staring at know they're being recording or their face is being recognised, or you're looking up everything about them and pretending you've got a really good memory, or, you know, whatever
it is. I think it's
weird.
Simon, are you thinking, would you like some, or are you just curious about
it? I like new technology. When it first comes out, like when the first iPad came out, I went and bought it just because I wanted to learn about it to be able to help others with theirs, like, you know?
Yeah.
So I love the idea, the fact that it's seeming is a bit, it's quite, I believe, true that it will be a thing, and it is the next innovation as far as engaging with the internet, at least.
Yeah, I think what will happen is as this technology improves, the need for larger and larger smartphones, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but for those of us that are a bit older, you will know that phones used to be really small, and the smaller they were, the better they were. You know, they used to have these like little pebble, Motorola Pebble phones and things like that. But now they're big because of the screen. And okay, they're addressing that with foldable screens, so you can have one that's either half the size or same size, but then turns into a tablet. But if you don't need a screen, if you've got the screen effectively in the display of the glasses, then initially you won't need a phone with a screen, so you can have a smaller phone or like a nub, which is effectively a phone without the screen. But in time, that electronics will be built into the glasses and the phone can completely disappear. So instead of having to pair it to the glasses, it will be a replacement. And of course, the next step after that is implantation. So you won't have to wear it because it... Well, I suppose the step in between will be some sort of contact lens, but then we'll start breaking the skin barrier. And then
putting the implant into animals, aren't they? Elon Musk put the implant into animals and did his first successful one into a human. I just think that's remarkable as far as being able to... Yeah. Basically, animals be able to talk back to us via a screen.
So it's very interesting. So there's a few companies doing that. It's not just Elon Musk's company, and some of them are a little bit further ahead than the Elon Musk company as well. So there are some really interesting things going on with that, because there are two problems. There is the problem of how to read the brain waves, okay, and at the moment, the best way of doing that is an implant. And the only reason why they're allowed to experiment on people to do that is that these are people who may be, for example, quadriplegic, and you know, they're trying to cure a problem. Of course, eventually, it'll be like the Borg, you know, the technology will be installed at birth. But so one is the electrical signals picking them up, and then what do you do with them? Because decoding electrical signals of brain waves, who can do that? I tell you who can do that, and AI is really good at spotting patterns. And they did this experiment where people who were locked in, you know, locked-in syndrome where they can't communicate, were able to reliably communicate with yes and no answers. But beyond that, they did this experiment where someone would listen to a piece of music, and the AI could not hear the music. It had no audio input, but it learned how to interpret how the person was perceiving the music. And I think they had like something like Hotel California, and it tried to reproduce it from the brain waves. And it didn't sound exactly the same, but it had the same vibe to it. You could actually tell that one was connected, related
to
the other. And you can... So this is the path towards telepathy, right? Because it reads my brain waves. It's like a fax machine, but instead of, you know, scanning a piece of paper and transmitting it electronically, it's scanning the brain, transmitting it electronically. Your device decodes my signals at the other end, and you know exactly what I'm thinking.
They're putting it in animals. I think and it's possible that animals are going to be able to communicate with humans.
Oh, I would love that with my two.
Yeah,
dogs.
You know,
I
think that could certainly happen. But also human to human collaboration. But then all sorts of privacy issues, right? Because how do you protect? I mean, why is Meta, for example, who makes its money by profiling us, by knowing everything there is to know about us, and then targeting advertising and God knows what else they're doing with the data? Mm-hmm. So why would they be so interested in this? And again, what's going to be the legal framework for this? You know, we've had this issue with self-driving cars. The technology's, you know, getting there, but we haven't got the legal framework for self-driving cars quite sorted yet.
Or the moral framework for
oh, don't start me on that. You know the moral conundrum about if it's about to hit someone, but it can avoid hitting them by going up on the pavement and hitting someone else.
Yeah.
But unlike the human driver, it's got the ability to do facial recognition, work out how old each person is, work out has that person got a criminal record, is that one a Nobel Prize winner, and it could, if we wanted it to, make a judgment about the value of those lives.
No.
See, humans can't do that easily.
I'm glad.
Unless it's a celebrity, you've got no chance.
But what sort of money are we talking about for these Meta glasses?
Do you know, I'm not sure of the price. I mean, they're a few hundred dollars, but they are subsidised because...
They want it to catch on.
Because they get your data. That's it.
And is it because it's directly linked to Facebook or Meta, what you call it?
Yeah, you have an account, and they get everything. They get, you know, all the information of what you're looking at. They can even work out if you limp and if you're likely, if maybe you've got the beginnings of a motor disease or something like that. They can detect these things, very, very subtle things, even things that you might not have noticed yet, they can notice. Plus, they have a good look at what you're looking at. They look at where your gaze is.
Amazing.
They can work out your sexuality quite easily because of what you're staring at, right? I mean, the amount of information that you could yield from this is huge.
Does that worry you at all, Simon? Are you just one of those people?
No, it doesn't. A lot of my friends, they worry about things like Alexa and things like that, whereas I'm not. I don't worry. I work on the principle I've got nothing to hide, so they're welcome to listen. That's the way I look at it. So I'm all for going forward with the new innovations.
And are you a late adapter? Or I mean, you said you jump in quite quickly with something. So do you think that you're ready to go with these glasses? Or will you wait to see, you know, maybe a couple of years to see how they change? Or
no, I will definitely get them when they're released. It's just a question of getting the right price point, whatever. I actually joined a Kickstarter on a different one that's copied, although it's not got the video in. It's got the AI and I only paid a dollar, although I think they're £300 when they're released. I'm not sure what the organization's called, although I think I might go with the Meta ones after your advice, because they, you know, I think it's right that if it's linked, it's linked. If they're being upfront and honest about it, then I'll go along with it. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And the hands, I saw the launch as well, with the hand obviously being used to move things on the... But I wouldn't be able to concentrate on that and walking and talking.
Well, I have that problem anyway, so it's not a big deal. But, you know, I can't chew gum either. But, look, it's fascinating. It's pretty much bleeding edge for anywhere near that price point. And you know it's going to be well supported because it's Meta.
Yeah, true.
But it is still a nascent technology, and, you know, you'll get some improvement with software updates, but there'll be a lot of improvements to the hardware to come. So you should expect to start having remorse around 18 months.
They've had a little bit of practice, because they had that, I'm not sure what it was called, although they had a screen with a camera on it, and it kind of failed. I don't think it does much anymore, although at least they've had that experience, and they maybe put that into the, it's just the development maybe.
Well, there was Google Glass, wasn't there?
No, they weren't glasses. It was Meta that they did, like a screen and a camera would follow you around, and you would be able to link, you'd be able to talk with other people. I don't think it really took off, although it was Meta that did it. I can't remember what it was called.
I don't know. There's a lot of tracking technologies out there that some of them work quite well now.
Simon, you've got to tell me when you get them.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah? Give me a call. Let me know. Don't Google me. Fevzi, you've got another gadget now, Stream Deck.
Yeah, so this is from a company called Elgato. Now owned by another company called Corsair, and it's a Stream Deck, so it's a box of buttons.
Right.
Okay.
And it
comes off. Yeah. Do you know, I bought this with my own money as well.
Oh no. That's fine.
I think it survives. So this is. There comes in different sizes, and you get a different number of buttons. Okay. So this is the biggest one. This is called the Stream Deck XL, and it's 32 buttons. And I can't power it up at the moment in here, but when you attach it, each one of these buttons have got an LCD colour screen inside it, like a little TV screen inside it. So it can show any icon that you want. One of the things about having buttons that do things is if it's a programmable button, it usually doesn't show. You end up putting it, writing on a bit of tape over it or whatever it is. With this one, it will do various things. So it's called a Stream Deck because it was originally for streamers, yeah, and people doing video. And so you could switch cameras with it. You could, you know, put up a, you know, writing on the screen. You could do anything. You could turn up microphones.
So it's like a mixing desk.
Well, it's like a bunch of macros, like commands that you program into it. So, you know, like on a computer, you do Control C or something, right? Or you could do a much more complicated set of commands. You program those into it and it will control different apps. So you don't have to be a streamer. If you just want to use it on a PC or a Mac and, you know, have Windows and Excel and just have it, you know, fire off and open the app of your choice. Maybe you want to have, you know, pause, play, volume.
So it's a shortcut.
It's essentially it's shortcuts, but because it's the standard, because it's the industry standard, it is really well supported by different apps. So if you're a broadcaster over the internet, you use maybe something like OBS or Twitch. You can control YouTube or Twitter or Discord or Spotify or Philips Hue. You can control your lighting with this as well. So it's very clever. And then you can have sort of sub-menus within it. So let's say I press Philips Hue and then it can be all my different lights and what I want to do with them.
Oh, right.
And I can go to specific colours or I can say, you know, bedtime or whatever. And it will just do everything. And it's a very strange thing. It's deceptive, this gadget, because in principle, it's really doesn't sound like much. Oh, well, you know, you can just do a few shortcuts. But actually, once you've invested a bit of time in setting it up, your productivity goes through the roof because you can just do everything very quickly and simply. You know, it's just like, because it's not just one thing. You can have a whole series. You could set up your morning routine on this and everything gets fired off and controlled like that. Or, as I say, if you're doing something like this show and you've got different cameras, you can just switch between the cameras. And the point is
need that lot in there anymore.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? You can do it live. You know, when you're on your own, you can actually set it up so it's simple enough to control without, because you could go into, let's say, OBS, which is a piece of free software for internet streaming of audio and video. But it's quite complicated to do it, you know, on the screen with a mouse during a broadcast.
Mm.
It's disruptive. But with this, you know, you develop muscle memory even where it is. And if you're not sure, you can actually see what each button does because it comes up in a really nice, fairly high resolution colour display.
And you do get used to it. I used to self-op at the BBC, the whole desk. So I'd be bringing in outside sources. Didn't need Sam, you know, doing all that myself whilst broadcasting. So that sounds like a similar thing.
Yeah, so it's very good.
I prefer it this way, Sam.
So this is about £220 because it's the biggest one, but they start at around sort of £50, £60, £70 depending on what you buy and where you buy them, and you can just have a few buttons. And even though it's a few buttons, it's still quite useful because you can drill down in the menu and the buttons get redefined. So you go down a layer, so I just choose an app, and then now all the buttons are relating to that app. And all the buttons then redefine themselves in terms of the picture on them, so you know exactly what they're doing. So let's say I press YouTube, and then within that, suddenly I've got all the controls for YouTube. I can alter the playback speed. I can bring up the transcription, whatever I want to do at the press of a button. And if it doesn't do it, you can program it to do it.
That is clever. Yeah. I mean, I can't even program my Hive to be connected to my boiler.
You're going to be cold.
I know. Well, I have to switch it on and off by hand.
It's
ridiculous. I just can't get them to pair. But anyway, so I'm probably not the person to be talking about that.
Well,
okay, so that is the Elgato Stream Deck. That you showed us the extra large one there, streamlined your system. Another question here. Got a question from Gary, who says, I want to ask FEDC advice on any recommendations of wireless earplugs / earphones that have a deep bass to high treble at a reasonable price.
Mm. Okay, so this is a tricky one because If you look at the, you should never buy earbuds based just on the specification. You should always buy them from somewhere where you have the ability to return them if they don't meet your needs, not least because they might not fit properly into your ear. But it's not just that. Perceptions of bass, and in fact, not just perceptions of bass, how much bass you get depends on the design of the earplug, not just the transceiver within it, how well it fits and what shape and size your ear canal is. I mean, it's a very, very personal thing. And they try and overcome it with, you know, parametric equalization and the whole thing. And you can do that. And some of them even have like a hearing test built into them where it determines how good your hearing is at all the different frequencies, just like a normal hearing test.
Wow.
And then it boosts and cuts the frequencies accordingly, so that you get the equivalent of a flat frequency response. But equally, you can then use it to boost the bass frequencies or make it sound really hollow by dipping the voice out. And, you know, you can do all of that. So, I mean, the Beats headsets are known for their bass, some of the Bose ones as well.
What sort of price are we looking at for wireless headphones anyway?
Oh, anything from like £30 to £300 or more.
Really? You can spend. Is that wide?
Yeah, you see, and I wouldn't spend that much on them. And
I'd lose them.
Well, yeah, one, you lose them. Two, as we were just talking before, you get a little battery inside the wireless ear. Those batteries are not replaceable.
Mm.
So after 200-300 charges, maybe sometimes not even that, you start to lose life of it. I don't mean... You know,
but they build in obsolescence, don't they? They want you to go out and buy another pair.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is tricky because, you know, it's hard sometimes to make a replaceable battery. But it can be done. Like, for example, for years now, phones have had sealed batteries and non-upgradable components. And then now there's a company, well, they've been doing it a while, it's a company called Fairphone. And they make a replaceable phone. I think there's 17 components that you can switch out, including the battery. So you go back to days where you can pop the back off a phone.
Wow.
And swap the battery. You can swap the camera module. You can swap the charging port. You can change the screen.
Yeah, that is fair, because at the moment, these companies, they know that the battery is not going to last forever. And it's always the battery, isn't it, the reason you upgrade?
One of them, because then they charge you, you know, £50 to £100 for a new battery.
Mm.
And then if you try and go to a third party, you know, you've invalidated your warranty, and then they blame. Apple even stop it from working because they code all their parts and they can actually disable it from working. It's almost like you're renting your phone.
Yeah.
You haven't really got full control over it. I mean, look, this is mine. This is an Apple. I bought it with, you know, with my money. But there are some downsides to it. On the one hand, you've got a safe, relatively safe environment. You've got a consistent environment. You've got lots of great software because they're controlling the ecosystem. But the downside is you can't control the look and feel of it and the activity of it in quite the way you can with, say, an Android phone. So it's like horses for courses.
So Gary's going to have to just go to somebody like Bose or Beats and try them.
Yeah, but as I say, so what I'm saying is I wouldn't be spending £300 on a pair. Apple AirPods and they're not the best quality. They're certainly not the most bassy. I bought them because of the additional features, how well, like the fact that when I walk up to an iPhone or an iPad, it detects it and just locks onto it automatically. Interestingly enough, with the latest generation of Apple earbuds, you can actually work it as a hearing aid. And this is really important because, first of all, it works really well. Yeah. Then they have to get the permission to sell it as a hearing aid product in each country. It's different system of authorizations, but it works really well. And what I really like about it is a lot of people will never use a hearing aid because they don't want to be seen to be using a hearing aid. And suddenly, your earbuds from Apple will suddenly be a proper hearing aid,
and you can still look cool wearing them.
Yeah, no one will know. And it's free. I mean, a lot of people own these things already. And even if you don't, they're so much cheaper It's interesting to talk about Apple in terms of being cheap, but it's so much cheaper than buying even over-the-counter hearing aids in this country or in America.
Wow, that's pretty clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Gary, let's know which way you go. I've got to take another quick break, Fevzi, but we'll be back in just a moment. And the next gadget you have is a clinically validated under-the-mattress sleep tracker.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
So it's from a company called Withings, which I just worked out the other day is Withings, as in Wi-Fi things.
Oh, is it?
It's a French company. For a while, they were bought out by Nokia Medical because they were so good that Nokia bought them, but it wasn't a good fit, and they bought themselves back out again. So Withings do a range of Wi-Fi connected tracking products. So it can be wristwatches, it can be their smart scales are fantastic. Love the smart scales. But this thing is a sleep analyzer. Now, why would you want to do that, particularly with a smartwatch? You know, it analyzes your sleep. But the problem with that is, first of all, this does it better. So this is a, let me show you, this is a called a sleep mat or a sleep analyzer.
Okay, so
and
it's not
goes,
that big.
It goes in from the edge of the mattress. You put it under your mattress, literally under the mattress. And I've got a whopping thick mattress because, you know, I'm a creature of luxury. And it still works, and you wouldn't think it does. It can actually hear you snoring. And not you, obviously, but it can hear one snoring.
I talk in my sleep.
Well, it will hear what you say. So be careful. It actually goes under the mattress, and it picks up a lot of information. So first of all, why use this instead of a watch? Number one, it's more accurate. Number two, if you're tracking your sleep with your watch and you're tracking your activity during the day, when are you charging your watch?
Ah, good point.
Yeah, because the watch needs to be charged pretty much every day, day and a half if you're lucky. So you lose a lot of tracking information whilst it's doing that. So if you have some sort of cardiac event, then it will not pick up that you've gone into, you know, AF or whatever. So what this thing does, goes under the mattress, connects wirelessly, powered by USB, goes, lost my thing. Let me just go there. So, you know, talking about having strange shaped ear canals.
Yeah, obviously yours is.
Yeah, well, so this one powers off USB, but it connects to Wi-Fi. So what it does, it doesn't have any display technology or anything on it, which is good. Why would you want that if it's going under the mattress, right? But it connects to the Withings HealthMate app, which is very good. I think the only independent app that can give Apple's health app a run for its money. It's very, very good. And what it does is it measures your sleep. So what does it measure? Measures how long you stay in bed before you go to sleep, how long you stay in bed after you wake up. It measures what type of, when you're asleep and what type of sleep. So it shows you a graph, shows you light sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. Why is this important? Because light sleep is not restorative sleep. It needs to be deep sleep or it needs to be REM sleep. So how much of your sleep is that? Should really be at least 40-50% should be a restorative sleep. But if you sleep very lightly, you might not know. You might have slept 8 hours and think you've got a good night's sleep and not really realize. And I've noticed a correlation between my cognitive function during the day and the quality of the sleep at night. And in such a way that sometimes I sleep less, but it's better quality and it's still good. This is also a medically validated device, so it detects something called sleep apnea, and there's very few devices that are, in this country, allowed to say, we think you might have sleep apnea, go see a doctor. So sleep apnea is a condition where the person, when they're sleeping, stops breathing, sometimes a number of times an hour, and they don't die of it instantly in the, you know, they don't expire because they didn't get... What happens is the brain takes you up through levels of consciousness to just below consciousness from, you know, so you're not aware it's happening, but then that restarts your breathing. You're conscious enough to be aware that you're not breathing, and then you move and do it. So different people, you know, their throats close down. So why is it important to know? Because sleep apnea is dangerous, particularly if you don't know that you have it. People with sleep apnea are more likely to get dementia. People with sleep apnea are more likely to get heart problems because you're starving potentially the brain or the cardiovascular system of oxygen. You're not breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is amazing how the body adapts, because people's bodies adapt to do with less oxygen. So people with sleep apnea would be quite good in, you know, deep space or something like that. But it's not, you say, well, you know, most people that have sleep apnea don't know that they have it. It's not always obvious, even if you sleep with a partner. Some people snore heavily and sometimes that's a clue, but not everyone who snores got sleep apnea and not everyone who has sleep apnea snores. So it's very important, because if you know you have it and you can measure how often it's happening, you can work out, does it happen more when I'm on my back? Does it help if I prop up my head? Does it help if I'm on my left or my right? It will track all of those things. So you can learn from that and make adjustments for it. Or if a person is overweight, they're more likely to have sleep apnea. So again, you've got the choice. You could try losing some weight and then you can measure if it's helping or not. Mm. If you're not, go pick out.
Does the company keep that data, or is it securely yours?
It's securely yours. It's not in the cloud. It's not in the cloud unless you want it to be. So what I do is I put it on my iPad. The app is on the iPad, and the same data doesn't appear on the phone because I haven't cloud synced it.
Right.
So it's a slight inconvenience, but that means I can keep it on here, and then when I back it up, I get a backup of that. So I choose some degree of privacy over the convenience of having it syncing across different devices. The one downside of the thing I don't like, to be honest with you, because this came from under my bed, right?
So, yeah.
The one downside of it that I don't like is that it doesn't update until you get out of bed. So sometimes I'll wake up and I thought, have I slept enough? Do I need to roll over and try and get a bit more?
That's a good point.
It hasn't up. Well, because it's not constantly updating, but when you're out of bed, it knows that at least you've gone up to go to the loo or whatever it is, and it will quickly update the app. So sometimes I have to get out of bed, look at it, and then get back into bed. It's not great from that point of view, but that's a small price to pay. And some people will say, you know, does it cause anxiety that you're constantly measuring it? Maybe it'd be better just to do it. You can just look at it from time to time. You don't always have to look at it.
Yeah, especially if you, like you said, you wake up tired and you want to know why you've woken up tired.
Yeah. Or if you're snoring heavily, that might be a sign that...
I don't have a choice. I have two dogs and they don't care.
It's not validated for dogs.
Is it not?
No.
No, because it might read a bit weird with Humphrey jumping on my face at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Let's very quickly, Mike in Newcastle has said, what's the best Apple item for editing video material for the highest quality, and what features are most important? Is it the MacBook Pro?
Well, okay, so the short answer is it is a Mac, and now we're in these, so Apple dumped Intel in their Macs about 5 years ago, so we're just about to see the launch of the M5 processor, and there's an M5, there will be, at the moment there's an M4, an M4 Pro, M4 Max, and sometimes you get an Ultra as well. The really interesting thing about it is, these chips are so good that even the base level chip will do quite well in video editing. If you are editing in 4K and maybe multiple streams, then you probably want to go for the Pro.
Yeah.
Most people don't need the Max. I mean, if you need the Max, you're probably a professional studio at that point. You don't need it. You need make sure you've got a decent amount of memory, so not the standard 16 gig. Maybe go for at least 24 or 32 gig. A Mac Mini will do it remarkably well, and it's like 5 inches square, and it's like just a puck that fits in your hand, pretty much. If you want to go up a bit more from that, then you know there are other Mac desktops that you could consider. Some people go for the laptop solution. I don't like that because I find that they're a bit noisier because of the form factor. They've got a more constrained space, they're not as well ventilated, and the problem with that is that they can tend to be a bit noisier. So in a studio environment, for example, I wouldn't want that. So I use various generations of Mac Mini because they're not even whisper quiet, they're pretty much silent. And they do the job. And the days of needing the top end machine to do video editing, even, you know, 4K video editing, those are gone. You don't need to do it. I would go for a Pro just to give myself a bit of headroom, but as importantly, I'd go for a different decent amount of RAM. Now you've got the question of storage, right? Because video takes up a lot of storage. Apple charge you an arm and a leg for storage internal, and strictly you can't add it inside the machine later. But modern Macs have got ports on them, these connectors called Thunderbolt connectors. Nowadays, either Thunderbolt 4 or even Thunderbolt 5. These are very fast. Thunderbolt 4 is 40 gigabits per second. This is plenty fast. So what you can do is you buy a Thunderbolt drive and you connect it externally and you make it your boot drive, or at least you make it the drive to store all your video on. This is much, much cheaper. Yeah. So what you can do, you can buy an enclosure, which is a case for a Thunderbolt drive, and then you go to someone like Crucial, which sells these M.2 SSDs. So a solid state drive is like a hard drive, but with no moving parts, and it's about the size and shape of a large stick of chewing gum. So you just pop it in there, into the enclosure, push it down, usually no tools required, tighten it up, and then connect it with a Thunderbolt cable. You then set it up in the way that you need to. You can what I do is I install the operating system, all my apps, and all my data on the external drive. So when I buy a Mac, I'll buy the one with the least, Apple hate me now, I'll buy the one with the least amount of storage in it, because it can double the price of the machine. If I want to go from the base storage, 1 terabyte, it will double the price of the machine. So this way, I can do it for a couple of £100 instead of £800.
Wow. Well, there you go, Mike. I hope that was helpful. Just very quickly, because I'm very late to a break, how much was this sleep analyzer?
List price £129. When it's on offer, it goes as low as £99.
Cool. Brilliant.
Bargain.
Hello there, this is Talk and it is Petri, and with me, Fevzi Turkup, editor of thegadgetdetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Before we get to our last gadget for this hour, Fevzi, could the AI replicant humans envisioned in the Blade Runner movie ever become a reality? And that's from Ian.
Yes.
There you go.
So they were not really AI, though. They were man-made humans or human-made humans, right?
Right.
So the replicants were brought into life as in adult form, and they would give them a short lifespan so that they didn't go rogue. But in order to keep them stable, they would give them memories. So they thought they were human, and they thought they were human, and that they would. That they would have a full and normal life, and that they'd had a childhood, so they'd been implanted with it. But in terms of, I mean, this is more to do with genetic engineering in terms of what they were, replicants, than AI, because they were not an artificial brain. They were a human brain, but they were optimized. So they had different models. So they had like the strategic model, the combat model. Daryl Hannah was, for some reason, the pleasure model, for reasons I can't understand. She used to follow troops into combat, you know. They were all designed for different purposes. And you can see that, I mean, this is essentially eugenics, isn't it? But you can create people with enhanced intellects or eyes or whatever. We're going at it, I think, a different way at the moment. We're pushing on all fronts, but I think the one that's probably going to bear fruit the quickest is AI augmentation. So we're used to augmenting ourselves through technology, and we get into a car, we drive, we get into an airplane, suddenly we can fly. We're augmenting our physicality in so many different ways. You can even get exoskeletons now where shipbuilders have it, and then they pick up these tools that are half a ton and they just use them and it's no problem. So we're used to that. What we're not used to is augmenting our cognitive function. And this is really interesting technologically, but also sociologically, because how many changes of a cognitive nature can you make before you cease to be human?
Mm.
So some people, including me, who think that we're pretty much the last generation of pure humans now. So racism will go out the window. It won't be about different races. It's like, how human are you? Because, you know, we could become the equivalent of a smart speaker. And let me explain why. A smart speaker is actually not smart. It's a dumb speaker. The reason is you get your Amazon Alexa and you have the situation where, excuse me, I'm just fiddling with that. You have the situation where you speak to it. So what does it do? It waits for the wake word, Alexa, and then it records everything it hears immediately after that. It doesn't do anything with that locally. It sends the recording off to, in this case, Amazon. Amazon decodes what was said, works out, understands what was said, works out what the answer should be, records the answer and sends the recording back to the dumb speaker, who then just reads it out. So a smart speaker is really a microphone, a bit of short memory for recording, and a speaker. We could become the same. If we have that brain-computer interface that we were talking about working well, okay, all of your really smart stuff will not be your meat brain, but it will be your AI brain, which could actually be in the room with you or anywhere in the world, or may not have a physical form at all. So, and in the future, I believe it won't necessarily even, the person won't even be conscious about whether they're reaching into their meat brain, as I now call it, or the AI brain, except for the fact that maybe they suddenly became smarter. So we become like, we become like the smart speaker, because we're hearing the question, we're speaking the answer maybe, but all the smarts are going on somewhere else. And when that happens, you know,
terrifying.
To what extent are we still human?
Bless
you.
Me.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
You're allergic to
AI. Yeah, I'm allergic to the idea of that. That's horrific.
And some people think that's the only way we get to survive in a world where AI will outstrip us, because our meat brains are essentially the same smarts as they've been for many thousands
They've not really.
They don't evolve.
No.
Whereas...
Well, we go backwards in a lot of cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. But with an AI brain, each generation is smarter than the last, and the gestation period, and I use the word advisedly because I think these are essentially... on their way to
and
becoming a life form.
Are the chips that are being put in human brains at the moment, are they the beginning of that?
The chips that are being put into human brains are transceivers. They're the things that can read brain waves and in some cases stimulate brains. So they are the sender and the receiver of brain waves. Yeah? Just like a phone, you know, has a microphone and a speaker on it, or, you know, any device has that. So they are beginning of the gateway, but it's then how smart is the AI that's reading the brain waves, and then how smart is the AI that can integrate with the brain and provide the information and the memories and everything. And so this could be a solution to, for example, dementia.
I was just going to say, could that work for...
And it could also work with things like, you know, motor neuron disease or...
And will we see augmented eyesight and things like that for the blind?
I'm sure we will. And we'll also... What's really interesting, they did an experiment where the human brain was very... You know, we talk about neuroplasticity, the ability of the brain to adapt to its changed circumstances. When this person with two arms was given a third robotic arm, the brain very quickly adapted to using all three arms in concert. You know, it's not... It's the brain doesn't see or hear or sense anything directly. It just gets the electrical signals that our eyes produce through the optic nerve, or our ears produce, you know. It doesn't matter. So you could give it new senses. You could build in night vision and it would cope with it quite well. Brain's very clever, you know. Very adaptable.
Very adaptable. Almost, I mean, in that sense, then human beings will be programmed at some point.
Well, you can you could get a situation where you don't have to, you know, study for 10 years.
You could download the information.
Yeah, Joe 90, right? You can, download the education into it, and you can be a professor of this instantly, you know.
Well, what's the point in all my experiences of journalists? That would be pointless. Somebody could just download it all. Fevzi, I absolutely love that. We have completely run out of time, and I know you had other bits. Will you come and do it again?
Of course.
That'd be amazing. And thank you for all of your questions as well. So that was Fevzi Turkalp, our gadget guru, editor of GadgetDetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Thank you for all of your messages. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to read them out.